All right, let's head over to the Zoom line. Mr. Joe Sinnott on the line with us. He's the, what are you, the CEO, is that right? Or president or both of Whitting Partners? You're CEO, correct?
You can call me whatever you want when you have your own company, but I stick with founder. I stick with executive coach. You know, my day job is working with others, not managing my company necessarily. So I like to lean into the coaching piece of my title there, Jason.
I will channel one of the best salesmen I've ever known in my life, Marty Newman, who would say, I'm the chief bottle washer. You know, he'd go through the whole deal and he'd go all the way down to the chief bottle washer, meaning he did everything within his organization. So you also are the host of the Energy Detox podcast. And today, folks, we're going to talk about mergers and acquisitions. And the reason we're going to talk about that is because ConocoPhillips and Marathon, is this a merger, Joe, or is this a buyout? Or I guess I should ask that. You're the expert in this. You've gone through a major merger before, and we'll let you talk about the details on what you can and can't. I know there's always NDAs involved when you are involved with different mergers, but the formula and a lot of the behaviors and actions are very similar. Similar when you go through a different merger. Doesn't matter what industry, really, because there's downsizing, there's merging together, there's customer coexistence, there's all kinds of different factors, intangible factors, really, that weigh into this outside of equipment and that whole deal. That's a whole other factor. So the latest being Conoco and Marathon, and I believe there was even another one the day before. I'm traveling, so I don't know what's going on. I'm supposed to be the one educating everybody else, but today we're going to have you do it because you know what you're talking about and you follow this stuff. So if you wouldn't mind first, just kind of giving us a little overview of the Marathon Conoco, either it's a merger or a buyout or what is it exactly?
Well, it's got some overlapping assets between ConocoPhillips is already doing and certainly what Marathon Oil had. I think particularly, you know, you're looking at overlap in the Eagle Ford and the Bakken. Obviously, there's Permian as well. So, you know, it's just the same old story that we've been hearing now for months in the world of oil and gas. And that is the synergies in 2024 when, you know, we're to the point where it's, you know, efficiencies and technology that's driving a lot of the, you know, the development of these unconventional wells. And, you know, it's pretty easy math on paper to say when you have some complementary assets and you have resources, obviously, you know, quite often from the human side of things that, you know, can really manage more. Well, you can manage more resources with less people and there's a big chunk of your synergy. So again, as unfortunate as that is for the people that'll be affected by this, like I said, the math on these, all these recent mergers and acquisitions is pretty straightforward, Jason.
One of the things I've noticed about the media over the last 20 years is it seems there's a certain underlying theme of like a happiness machine. There's always got it, you know, you got to please everybody, much like how, you know, sports kind of transition to where there's no winners and losers, participation trophies, that sort of thing. So there is that in the media as well. And a lot of it has to do with marketing to where they want to make sure certain words are used so they don't hurt feelings or it doesn't upset business plans or whatever the case is. So when I see the name merger, I do pause because there are mergers, there are acquisitions, there are straight out buyouts, there's, you know, restructuring, that sort of thing. So, and I understand that the answer to this question, it probably, you get more stories than Mother Goose because it depends on who you're talking to. So somebody who's been through, you know, the M&A procedure before, Joe, how are you looking at this? Is this a merger? Is this an acquisition? Is this a partnership? What's the takeaway from you?
Well, my perspective, this definitely checks the acquisition box. So, you know, all things will be ConocoPhillips. They're taking these assets. They are clearly the, you know, the big player in all this. So, yeah, you know, there's going to be plenty of folks that use the word merger, you know, interchangeably with acquisition. But look, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's pretty straightforward that you're going to have one clear you know, operator is not the ideal word to use here, Jason, but, you know, one key big player that's going to take these resources, take these assets from Marathon and, you know, apply their best practices and, you know, what they think is best to generate those synergies and generate, you know, more value for their shareholders.
5,000 foot view question here. Did you mention that the refinery and the gas stations are separate?
Yeah. So again, a lot of people will look at Marathon and say, man, I see them all over the place. You know, there's no way they're only worth $17 billion or $22 billion if you throw the debt number in there. But again, that's because a decade or so ago, basically Marathon separated out the E&P assets from, you know, their more petroleum refining element of Marathon. So yes, so this is just the E&P upstream side of things.
Well, that makes some good sense from a branding and marketing standpoint, because if Marathon wanted to go into the convenience store or the, you know, the travel stop type of a business, they would have a very good customer with Conoco. They obviously know the company very well. And secondly, they could get into those different sides because that whole industry is changing now, whether it be electric changing, charging stations, or I'm sure a lot of people have noticed that the convenience stores have upped their food preparation service to where they don't care about the Snickers anymore. They want you to come in to get a taco or a burger or a submarine sandwich or a pizza. So the convenience stores have really changed in a lot of smaller communities. The convenience store is even the cafe now. So even you've got that real estate angle. So to me, that's interesting right out of the gate that Conoco would take over kind of that side of it, that E&P side, whereas Marathon, if they wanted to, they could keep that name. Because sometimes when these happen, what's the Marathon name just going to go away? Well, no, it's actually if they want to do something with it, they can. Or they can package that and, you know, sell it to, you know, Flying J or whoever the heck. So what do you make of all that? Because really, they kind of created two assets here.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think what's maybe even more interesting than that is public perception or misperception of all of these things, right? You know, your general person out there in the wild is not going to have, you know, it's not going to make any impact on them, certainly, and they're not going to see any difference, right? I mean, they just opened an Amoco station around here, right? You know, it's like Amoco, you know, is that even still a thing? And again, it just speaks to the fact that, you know what, to your point, Jason, it's brand, right? You know, people know Amoco, you know, BP Amoco, BP, you know, it doesn't. None of that actually matters at the end of the day. It is all branding. So I think if nothing else, Jason, it's a good opportunity to talk to people about, hey, you know, the difference between upstream, midstream, downstream, certainly the distribution side when it comes to, you know, gas stations and the like. As far as the practicality of, yeah, Marathon still having that name. Yeah, I mean, that's obviously there's certainly value in that. But from an E&P standpoint, you know, all your synergies are going to come from the fact that, you know, Marathon had valuable assets, certainly valuable knowledge and technology and approaches. But at the end of the day, it's going to largely be driven by the assets, Jason.
Well, let's talk about the most valuable asset, the human asset. And whenever you have a merger, acquisition, you've got duplication, or as Stefan Marbury says, reduplication of departments. And, you know, human resources is always the one that people give as an example, that generally there's some layoffs there because that's, you know, paperwork and very it's a universal type of a department, if you will. Marketing, sometimes, you know, you look at a creative person versus this creative person, and you've got to make some decisions. And, you know, I'll ask you, you know, for me, I've always thought there'd be a home field advantage. Obviously, if you're from the other company, you still have, you know, a seat at the table type of a thing. But talk to me about how that goes, because whenever I see a headline about a merger or an acquisition, immediately I think of the people, and how there's a certain percentage of those people that are going to be looking for a new job, or get a severance package, or those types of things. So talk to me about those difficult discussions, right, that we're having, I guess.
Well, one of the things that makes the discussions difficult when things are announced like this is the unknowns, right? You know, immediately, no matter who you are in the company, no matter what side you're on, there's going to be a lot more questions than are answers for some period of time. And so, you know, looking at it through, you know, the leadership lens, as I do as a leadership coach, you know, a lot of my energy working with people who are, you know, navigating these types of things is, you know, being prepared to address questions that you don't have answers to. Because one of the worst things you could do in these situations, Jason, is, you know, give either an unsatisfactory answer or misinformation, or steer people in the wrong direction when you have the best of intentions. But, you know, you feel like you need to say something because you recognize that, yes, these people are worried, or they're at least curious, if nothing else. And you want to give them something when you're not necessarily in a position to do it. And it takes preparation sometimes, Jason, to say, look, I mean, there's a handful of questions, you know, that are going to be coming. Can you provide responses, not necessarily answers, but can you provide responses that are actually going to satiate people's desire for not information, Jason? I mean, everybody's going to poke for information, but, you know, that it's going to help them believe that they're truly being set up for long-term success, no matter whether they have a job in the next couple of months or not. Again, that's easier said than done, but now is the time where those leaders, those people who are going to be communicating with others, need to take the time to think of more creative responses than reading the company line, or again, saying something off the cuff that is, you know, potentially going to put them in a position that they don't want to find themselves in.
I tend to think we're at about the 50-yard line for some of these M&A activities. And I'll tell you why is that there. I made a comment over the weekend. I was talking with a 79-year-old staunch Donald Trump supporter, okay? And he was asking me what the heck is wrong with the economy and what the heck is this and all these different things, right? He was, and I just kind of looked at him and I said, you know, we were talking, it kind of bled into the carbon industry a little bit. And I was talking about how a few of the people that I've interviewed, they're talking about how the entire carbon industry is being driven from the federal government, whether it's through the regulations or through the different grants and different programs they've set up. And, you know, we've heard that from three or four different people actually that are working currently in the industry. And so I kind of brought that up. And then I said, on top of that, I said, plus, I go, I believe they've printed more money than America had in the last 5 years. I go, the amount of money that's been printed since COVID, I think that's more money than America had before that. I go, so when you think about the amount of money they've injected into the economy already, and the changes that have happened either through the EPA or, you know, whatever alphabet group you want to name, I think we got some more mergers and acquisitions going. And I bring up that context as example, Joe, as example. So what are your thoughts on that as somebody who's been through some major mergers?
I think regardless of the economy, Jason, you know, the maturity, if you will, of maybe not the oil and gas industry as a whole, but certainly, you know, we're looking at shale, right? You know, you're looking at how far the shale industry has come in the last 20 years. It makes sense that you're going to get to a point where, all right, you know, if company A is doing the same thing as company B, you know, that it's, you know, basically it's the, you know, it's the fiduciary responsibility of, you know, the boards and the management teams to look and explore these things. And that's going to be the case no matter what the economy is doing, no matter how much money's been printed, no matter what the state of inflation is. You know, it's just the natural evolution of all of these things. So obviously, you know, monetary policy and all of those things play into these decisions, Jason. But, you know, looking at it, you know, just putting on my engineering cap and just kind of looking at the, you know, the X's and O's and the ones and zeros and everything else, you know, at some point, Jason, unfortunately, it is just math. And when you have mature approaches to shale development, you know, you're going to start seeing overlap. And when you see overlap, as again is the case, and, you know, certainly again in the Bakken and Eagleford, when it comes to Marathon and ConocoPhillips, you know, it's just tough to ignore. And you're just going to keep seeing these things, Jason, again, regardless of what's going on in the, you know, the macro environment.
I mentioned, I think we're on about the 50 yard line. And so when we take a look at some of these mergers, and I think this is a pretty big one, actually. I was a little bit taken back by the numbers. And so I'm glad you explained to me why they seem lower than what I expected them to be. And great way to put it, because there's Marathon gas stations all over the place. And so somebody's perception might be a little bit different, but Marathon, with the refinery and with their legacy, their history, their name, the assistance of the gas station branding, to me, they're like top 10 in the U.S. and Conoco is too. So I put this merger up there, you know, with some of the majors that have happened between, you know, the Chevron Hess and was it Chesapeake and Southwest, maybe? Was that right?
Well, Chesapeake Southwest, which is still, you know, going through the process there. But yeah, that was one of the ones that was announced a couple months ago.
Where do you rank this Conoco? Conoco Marathon merger in with, you know, some of the ones that we've had recently? And, you know, where do you see, you know, if we were to football it out, you know, I said the 50 yard line, you know, do you see, you know, a yard line that the mergers are at? Do you see more coming? Do you see it over, I guess? Talk to me a little bit about those two things.
One, definitely not over. Two, I'd say we've crossed the 50 yard line in terms of the big ones, but you know, there's still plenty of smaller players out there. So, you know, you're not going to see, well, heck, Jason, I mean, even this one, right? You know, this was only $17 billion or, you know, plus $5 billion in debt. You know, that's what, quarter, maybe a third of the Chevron acquisition, about a third of the Exxon Pioneer acquisition that just closed not too long ago. So, yeah, I mean, you can look at this as, you know, it is smaller, Jason, but there's ones that are way smaller than this. So, again, if you're looking at the big boys, you're honestly off the top of my head, I don't know what's next, at least domestically. Certainly, if you start looking internationally, you know, that opens up a whole other can of worms. But you start looking internationally, you also have a lot of hair on those potential deals, too. You know, they're not going to be as straightforward as what was announced with, you know, any, well, I guess Chevron and Hess wasn't necessarily super straightforward. There were some of those international assets. But again, that underscores the fact, Jason, that, you know, domestically, you're going to have a lot of smaller ones that are going to be easier to execute upon. But some of these international ones might not be as tempting, you know, depending on what side you're on.
Back when I was doing talk radio, we would, you know, have certain things that would happen where certain companies could, you know, make hay while the sun shines, so to speak. For example, a hailstorm came through and all of a sudden the airwaves were flooded with insurance ads and that kind of thing, you know. And I always think of something like that when it comes to mergers and acquisitions, when it comes to, you know, like your line of work, executive coaching, because to me, I would think that's when a company would really benefit from your service. I mean, I know that you do like the, you know, annual tune-ups, and people can bring you in for a different session or a different program and et cetera. But to me, I would think that some real purpose behind what you have going on would certainly help some of those mergers and acquisitions, because that's kind of what your company stems from, is kind of an offshoot of that, because you have an understanding of what these mergers and acquisitions go through in addition to the oil and gas industry. And so it's a really unique perspective. And so give yourself an opportunity here to talk about your services and how, you know, you can guide people through these different times, because I agree. I think there's going to be a lot of little ones. You know, I mentioned the 50 yard line. It's like, you know, the big ones are the, you know, the 20 and 25 yard passes. And now we're going to see a lot of little little dink and dunks of 3 yards and 5 yards and that sort of thing. You know, it just seems like that's on the horizon. So talk to us about, you know, what you do and how you help people get through these times specifically.
Well, I guess if we stick with the football analogy, Jason, you know, my focus is on conscious leadership. Heck, even the company name Winning Partners, the whole concept is that there's lots of leaders, lots of companies that are unwittingly just going through the motions. You know, they're unwittingly leaving value on the table. They're unwittingly damaging relationships with their employees, with other companies. And so this idea of conscious leadership, Jason, is saying, hey, look, you're not just going to march down the field and just call the same plays that everybody would expect you to call. You know, that's not going to yield differentiated results. Unfortunately, though, when it comes to the day-to-day operations of oil and gas companies, and certainly when big things come down the line, like mergers and acquisitions, it becomes even easier to go through the motions and do things unconsciously and say the things that people expect you to say and do the things that people expect you to do and integrate assets the way people would expect you to integrate assets and deal with the realities of redundant positions the way people would expect you to deal with these things. And my challenge to people in the oil and gas industry, which of course is my focus, is to look for unconventional approaches to these things, differentiated approaches that aren't just going to set you apart and maybe, you know, boost your bottom line by a little bit, but also get your workforce excited to work for a company that's innovative in all things, not just day to day, but also when these big things come down the line. But Jason, again, the oil and gas industry, by and large, is not wired for that. You know, we're go, 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 right? We get stuff done, you know, on to the next fire, up, on to the next fire. Oh, we're going to fight this one, move on. And that's how people have gotten rewarded. That's what our industry has been very good at, quite frankly. But when it comes to leadership and when it comes to, you know, either turnovers or unforced errors or, you know, fumbling away opportunities, most of what I see and most of what I deal with is leaders who, again, fall back on the status quo, fall back on the stale playbook that everybody else is using. And so, again, as far as my services go, look, there's millions of coaches out there. There's no shortage of executive coaches and leadership coaches and career coaches. But my focus is not just on oil and gas, but it's also marrying the realities, like you said, of having lived through these things, having a technical background, and again, challenging people from a place of independence to think and act differently. So anyway, I guess that's my pitch, if you will, Jason, but it really all comes down to, again, conscious leadership.
I'm going to take your think differently and incorporate in a previous interview I did last week with Warren Martin. He's the executive director of Kansas Strong. Kansas is the 11th producing oil and gas in the nation. And we kind of call them the canary in the coal mine, you know, type of a thing, when they're I think, 85% independent producers. So they get impacted first by a lot of regulations and a lot of different technologies and et cetera, et cetera. And part of the conversation we had last week was that the oil and gas industry operated so long hand in hand with the government. And now that dynamic and that relationship is changing. And during the course of that kind of symbiotic relationship they had, you know, with government relations and different departments and even lobbyists thrown in there, that, you know, they did have that symbiotic relationship, but they did lose touch with the end user and a lot of their investors and different types of things. So this is actually a question that I would even target at and say specifically, if you're a C-suite executive, listen up. If you're not, it might not impact you as much. So it's just going to be, you know, decent listening and that sort of thing. But right now, there's a communication issue happening, and there's a transition happening, not only in energy, but with a consciousness to where, you know, people will leave the room if you say oil and gas or coal. Not everybody, but some do. And they, you know, that's a hard person to communicate with. But unfortunately, for the energy industry, you have to. That's your end user. That's your end customer. So this symbiotic relationship that was developed, you know, through the energy industry. And by the way, pharmaceutical has it and a few other industries too. So this is not picking on the energy industry. This is just something that I've had multiple. Stu Turley and I had the same conversation with the Energy Newsbeat, same exact conversation about how the industry, specifically the oil and gas industry, there's a mind shift changing, and some C-suite executives are understanding it and some aren't. And that's why I think, too, these mergers and acquisitions, I think there's a different dynamic in play. I think the whether people are embracing, you know, this new kind of, you know, we're going to be a new vision, a new day type of thing versus hanging on to the old way. So you said think differently. That's what I thought of when you said think differently. If you wouldn't mind commenting on just what I said, you don't have to because it sounds a little political. I understand that. But talk to me about the think differently aspect, because I think that's dead on. I think that that's a reason that your services and people like you are so well used right now, because this is an intangible thing. And sometimes navigating intangible waters, you need somebody that can think differently, Joe, especially somebody from the outside.
Yeah. So, well, and yeah, there's, you know, the value of having an outsider with insider knowledge is, you know, is significant, Jason. And when it comes to the think differently piece, I'll give you an example of that. You know, for a company that hasn't, you know, yet gone through a merger or an acquisition, or has, and but has a short memory and is now coasting along, you know, one way to think differently, if you're a leader, or again, at a higher level, if you're, you know, in human resources, or if you have a learning and development team, is to basically ask the question, hey, what can we do for our employees to get them in a position where if they don't have a job tomorrow, they're going to be just fine. Heck, they might even be better off. And obviously companies would say, oh, well, we're doing that anyway, right? Oh, we provide, you know, learning opportunities and this and that. But no, thinking differently says, no, let's be blunt about this. You know, what can you do to your resume today while you're gainfully employed and while we as a company want you to be here? What could you do to boost your resume so that if you wanted to walk out the door tomorrow, you'd have no problem doing it, whether it's voluntary or involuntary? You know, that's the type of question that can make people squirm, right? Well, why would we do that? Why would we, you know, proactively put people in a position where they are, you know, even more valuable to another company? And again, from a human standpoint, you'd say, well, absolutely, we should be doing that. But from a business standpoint, there's a lot of people who might say, yeah, let's be innovative, let's think differently. But when you pose that idea to them, it makes them very, very uncomfortable. But, you know, what's the downside, right, Jason? You know, people are looking, you know, people are scared anyway, right? People are looking over their shoulders, wondering, you know, when the day is going to come that they're not going to be around. Why wouldn't you erase that fear by doing something proactive like that? And again, using that language, not dancing around the realities that, hey, look, there's no guarantees that you're going to have a job for any period of time. Let's do something about it so that while you're here, you focus. And oh, by the way, if you recognize that our company is the type of company that's going to do that proactively and trust you and give you those resources, odds are you're probably going to hang around anyway because you like the way we approach things. And you're probably going to tell your colleagues and your friends and coworkers or former coworkers that this is the type of place that they want to work. So anyway, that's one specific example of thinking differently, Jason, in sort of a pre-merger and acquisition context.
You got time for one more?
I think I got time for one more, Jason.
All right. So, you know, I've been road tripping, trying to get back to the Minnesota property to find out how many mice are in that right now. Normally I would have been back a few months earlier and gotten a handle on it. As spring thaws out, sometimes I have to worry about those things as I'm right next to a body of water. So I'm going through Nebraska right now, Grand Island, where the state fair is where I'm located right now. And, you know, there's road construction. And sometimes when you're a corporation, what do they call them? Big ships are hard to turn, right? That's always the analogy. Big ships, you know, moving down the way, they're hard to turn. And small business are the little tugboats and speedboats and that type of thing that can be a little bit more nimble, a little bit more quick. And so, you know, as I'm kind of moving down the interstate, you know, going 80 miles an hour, we got a merge happening before us. We got two lanes going into one. And when a merger happens, whether it's in business or on the road, all of a sudden now you really have to read the room. You have to be aware of your surroundings, Joe, because for me, are there semis next to me? All of a sudden, you know, the quick, nimble motorcycle, can he go buzz by quick, you know, the small business, can they buzz by quick when there's an issue? Or is it a, you know, a double decker type of a semi or a FedEx one that carries three of those things? So should I get in front of them quick or should I let them get ahead of me? Because, for example, the FedEx one, hey, that might be something that does a lot of research. And so my industry, every day that I can hold out, research gets us ahead. So I'll let them do the research and then I'll just kind of, you know, reverse engineer their stuff and then quickly move ahead type of a thing. There's a lot of different, you know, reading the rooms and a lot of different examples I can give. But my point is that you have to make a decision whether you're going to move ahead, you're going to stay the same pace, or you're going to slow down and let everything move ahead so you can get kind of on the caboose, if you will, or find your spot. But eventually what happens is that at the end of that one lane, you become two. So either you've got the freedom now to be a small business and move on after the merger's done, if you were one of the ones let go or decided to leave, or you're part of a bigger organization now that literally has two different revenue streams now, because obviously the idea is that you want to increase your customer base or your revenue streams. One of the reasons that Exxon bought Denbury was for the carbon management. Okay. And now we take a look at, you know, the Marathon, Conoco, that was for the assets. So for customers, if you will. So all of a sudden, boom, they increase their revenue stream. So when I look at the merger analogy, that's what I think of. Honestly, I think of where you have to read the room. And those are the examples I gave, Joe, about merging into traffic. Talk to me about reading the room a little bit when you're merging in a corporation, because I think there's a lot of similarities. I don't know if you agree with me or not, but that's what I think.
Oh, I agree 100%. You know, I mean, you take driving in general, and, you know, hazards abound, and, you know, your level of alertness and awareness is, you know, it's a very good chance it's the difference between making it home safe and sound or winding up in a ditch or even worse. Right. So,
but I should mention, Joe, quickly before I had to merge, I was on cruise control. I was watching two movies and, you know, I mean, hey, life was good, man. All of a sudden now I got to think and make a decision. What's going on?
Yeah. So needless to say, yes. Yeah. We got a lot of levels to this analogy. So, agree 100%. And I think, again, when it comes to the realities of corporate mergers and acquisitions, Jason, I'm going to say with the same thing I just said a couple minutes ago. And that is, you know, you can't just go through the motions. You can't just, what do you want to say, be on autopilot. You know, you do need to understand, you used the word communication earlier, right? You know, you need to communicate with the other cars on the road, right? You know, you need to make eye contact at times. If, you know, is the person going to let you in? You know, when it comes time to merge, or they looking the other way because, you know, for whatever reason, they don't want to let you in. It's those little things that if you're not aware of could be catastrophic for you as an individual and your career, or obviously to, you know, to your ability to capture all of the synergies of a big deal. So, yeah, I love the merging in traffic analogy, Jason. And I guess the only thing I'll add to that, and maybe this is, again, just restating what I said earlier, but, you know, you think about how often those signs, you know, you mentioned, you know, construction or even just on a normal, a merge point on an on-ramp there that exists, you know, 365 days a year. How often do drivers ignore the signs, right? They're ignoring the signs and they're doing things because they think it's the right thing to do, or they think it's the nice thing to do. For example, you know, maybe they try to merge in a couple hundred yards before the actual merge point. And they might think, well, that's the nice thing to do, right? I don't want to be that person that's seen driving all the way up in the right lane and then merging at the last minute. Well, in many cases, the sign literally says, use both lanes all the way to the merge point. Why? Because it's safer, because it's more effective, it's more efficient. But because of peer pressure, or again, this false sense of, well, I need to be nice, I don't want people to think that I'm just trying to cut them off, you ignore those signs. And that's really where coaching comes into play, Jason, is looking for these signs, looking for things that individuals might be missing with the best of intentions, but that, again, are costing them money, time, efficiency, sanity, whatever that is. So, again, I love the analogy, clearly, and I would probably keep going on, but I'm going to be quiet now and turn it back to you for whatever else you got here as we wrap up.
Well, I have another analogy along the same lines, because as you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, the gentleman who tries to speed up and then the other person speeds up. So he slows down and then they slow down. He's getting just kind of enraged because he's trying to do his own thing and he can't seem to get in. And eventually he's got to fall in line or he's got to go off road and get emergency services. So I was just thinking about that. Like, that's another place where you come in, because somebody might be trying to do the right thing and they keep getting, you know, rejection or the door slammed in them or pushed off or whatever the case is. And so you're building up this like inner rage or whatever the case is. And so, but eventually, like that merger says, you better fall in line or you're going off road, buddy. You're figuring things out on your own. And that was, I was thinking of Joe. That's honestly, I was thinking about that because I've been that person. I've tried to speed up and the person next to me did the same thing at the same time. And they didn't do it to be mean. They just did it because they were, you know, trying to be intuitive too. We just both had a good idea type of a thing, but they had the inside edge because they were in the lane that was going to be merged into. So that's the home team, right? That's the home team. That's the human resource director for one of the companies versus the other one. So yeah, that was kind of my, I don't know if you have anything to say on that, but that was kind of my thought where there's a lot of different plays and a lot of different personalities that can come into those and they can be created with zero ill intent. It's just because people have to make real decisions in real time and the next day's coming, whether they like it or not, Joe.
Yeah. All I'll say to that, Jason, is, you know, coming back to what I do as a coach, because I'll be honest, it's not rocket science. You know, I'm able to build on my, you know, my experience as a coach and certainly before that. But at the end of the day, I ask a lot of dumb questions, Jason. And when you're talking about, you know, a situation where somebody is doing something in traffic, you know, who's there to ask that person or ask, you know, whoever it is, right? You know, well, what's the point? Is it worth it? What's the upside? You know, are you saving 25 seconds on your drive for, as you said, you know, needing emergency road services? You know, and a lot of what I do is just asking those questions to say, all right, well, what, you know, in a very nice way, of course, say, well, all right, well, what's the point? What's the value in this? You know, what's the downside to this? And again, how many people in the heat of the moment while driving, you know, they don't have that voice either next to them or in their own head saying, all right, is this worth it? And, you know, it's amazing, Jason, that there's a good chunk of my time spent with people basically just asking those questions. So what? What's the point? What's the upside? Is it worth it? And so I guess for anybody that's, again, navigating now a merger or an acquisition or a merging of traffic, you know, make sure you're stopping to ask yourself that question. Is it worth it? Do I really need to do this? Who says I need to do this? Challenge the status quo. Think differently. Act differently. And again, you do that, you'll get different and probably better results.
You got any upcoming moderating or speaking gigs with the many organizations that you are a part of and volunteer your time for?
Oh, there's always something on the calendar, Jason. Although I think the summer calendar gets filled with moderating my four children and trying to keep them from attacking each other or having aggressive merging of personalities, if you will. But no, continuing to moderate SPE tech talks on occasion there and a couple other speaking engagements. Just wrapped up one. Actually, I'm, you know, just thinking about mergers and the impacts. One for the local Women's Energy Network chapter here in Pittsburgh. And, you know, we were talking about, in part, the impact of other energy sources. So obviously beyond oil and gas, you know, what does it mean when, you know, solar and wind come to town? You know, what does that mean for potential jobs one way or the other? And I'll tell you, Jason, it's the same conversation we're having here. It's, you know, making sure that you don't fall into the trap of just, you know, boosting your resume and going through the motions to put yourself in a position to be better off if something happens to your job, the same motions that everybody else is doing. Helping people think differently and say, hey, no, this is undoubtedly an opportunity no matter what happens. And again, you know, I think I'm a testament to that. You know, 5 years ago when, you know, my nice, stable job came to an end after 11 years, you know, it was definitely an opportunity that I, quite frankly, you know, wouldn't have looked at if it, you know, wasn't sort of forced upon me, if you will. And so if you want to get ahead of people, you got to start asking those questions. You got to start preparing yourself to say, hey, what happens when inevitably I have an opportunity to graduate, if you will, if you use all these euphemistic terms, you know, from my current employer or my current industry. And if you're doing that ahead of time, you're investing any amount of time, energy, money in that now, I think it goes without saying that you're going to be better off in the long run.
This women's group in Pittsburgh, what was the name of that again?
Well, this is a much bigger group. I think they have at least 25 chapters nationwide. It's the Women's Energy Network, often called WEN. And we have a sizable chapter here in the greater Pittsburgh region that I'm a member of and was fortunate enough to lead a workshop on there a couple weeks ago, again, covering some of the topics we just talked about.
Well, I wanted to ask you about two things here. And one is about the women's side of energy, because when I look at oil and gas specifically, and energy as a broader picture, it's been primarily male dominated. Even if women worked, it was still a lot of male dominance that was in leadership. And, you know, we've got some changes happen, whether it be from Oxy or, you know, another company that I can't think of off the top of my head that has female leadership in play. But one of the things that I've said since day one with the Crude Life platform is that I believe, and the reason we would do an annual feature on women and energy was for this reason, was that a woman's intuition is different than a man's intuition. And I believe now more than ever, a woman's intuition is needed in oil and gas. And I'm not sure if that's a controversial statement to say. I'm not sure if that's a sexist statement to say. I don't even know if you and I are qualified to even talk about this or not, but I believe it's true. I believe that women have a different intuition than men, and I believe that it's needed in oil and gas more than ever. I don't know if you want to touch that with a 10-foot pole or not, but what's your comments on what I just said?
I fully embrace the question and the topic. And I'll say this, Jason, even without weighing in on how much better women's intuition is than us men, one thing is for sure.
It's just different.
Well,
it's not even
it is different.
Better. It's different.
But,
yeah.
But here's the problem in oil and gas, and quite frankly, any industry. Women, and again, the facts bear this out, women do not get the same level of feedback and data, if you will, about themselves and their performance that men get. And that is, again, I mean, that is a universal rule. And, you know, because of that, women, unfortunately, you know, need to lean on their intuition more. I mean, you, right? If I was hiding data from you, basically, Jason, and I wasn't giving you good, open, honest, complete feedback, you would be left to your own devices to, quite frankly, guess or get that information from somewhere else. So again, I can speak to this as a coach and say, when I have the opportunity to coach women directly or indirectly, I spend a lot of my time making sure that they have the insights about themselves that they might not get from their colleagues. And again, it is absolutely a problem, because if they don't have access to the same information, well, how the heck are they going to be able to contribute at the level that they want to contribute at? So again, I'll pause there, but no, you're certainly not wrong in your assessment, at least based on my experience, Jason.
I was thinking of the sterile example of that, because, you know, again, it's whether it's a formula, a behavior, a pattern, they're very similar. But I was thinking about if that were to transition over to the money side of the world, insider trading, for example, if you don't have all the information and somebody with insider trading has different information, it's a different world. You are literally not in the same world. People are making mm-hmm. different decisions for their livelihood based on completely different information that only they have access to, or they're withholding. There's a reason that you don't have access to that, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be that you wear a purple hat. I don't know. Could be a number of different. Well, some people, you know, grimace. McDonald's scared some kids, you know, that sort of thing. Just a big purple blob coming at you. I'm just kidding.
All right. So well, anyway, speaking of grimacing, speaking of grimacing and women's intuition, I am committed to attend one of my children's end of school year things. And I don't want my wife, my beautiful wife, whose intuition is usually correct, that I would just, you know, keep working and going if I don't stop here. So lest her intuition be proven correctly for, you know, probably about the 1,000th time here in just the last couple of years.
Then I will. I'm
probably
going
to have to wrap things up.
I will save my final question for a preview then, that because I wanted to preview it anyways, which is that I think for our next interview, Joe, I'd like to bring you in, not even news related, but to do a topic about what we can learn from our children about business, about our children, because we've mentioned them several times, you know, how they really do control a lot of our lives, whether it be from schedule or the fact that maybe they, you know, just ethically and morally, we probably act a little bit better around them than maybe if we're with our buddies. Anyway, I'd like us to do a show on that. I'd like us to do an interview on just the, we're both fathers, and so we'll have firsthand experience, but things that our children taught us that we could bring to the business world. What do you say?
I'm game. I look forward to that conversation, Jason.
All right, man. We'll catch you next time. I know you got to go. You got a hard time, so we'll check you later, man. Hard meaning in the media world, not, you know, in the philosophical.
Either way, Jason, thanks as always for another enjoyable conversation.
All right. Thanks, man.